This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington.
We're just minutes away from the first event on the ESPN schedule. That's the 1979 NCAA College Football Preview. And then we're going to follow that with a doubleheader of games. Two of the Professional Slow Pitch League World Series games will be seen tonight. Now, softball is one of those rare sports that everybody knows something about. Why? Because we all play it on Sunday when we drink a little beer.
Very little about the first broadcast day of ESPN made it look like a sure thing. Lee Leonard, the first anchor of the first program, inaugurated the network on September 7th, 1979. Nothing against pro softball, but when you're launching the world's first 24-hour sports network, beggars can't be choosers. It was so new that the channel's president explained to viewers how satellite TV works, letting the signal from Bristol, Connecticut, reach the entire nation. ESPN and its groundbreaking newscast SportsCenter changed the business of sports and the lives of sports fans. From its cheeky promos to the catchphrases of its anchors, the network went through a lot of changes along the way. Joining us from Connecticut is Bob Lee, a former anchor of SportsCenter and the network's daily news magazine, Outside the Lines. Lee joined ESPN in its very first week on the air, and he retired this summer. Bob, welcome to 1A.
Hi, Joshua. Great to be with you. And a lot of memories from that first sound clip that you played.
Oh, there's more. I'm going to get to some more memories in just a minute.
That'll be great.
Joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida, is NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. Eric, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get to some more of those memories, Bob. You started at ESPN on September 9th, 1979. Here is another clip from day one. In fact, here is where that first clip will pick up where that left off.
Now, here's another innovation on ESPN, and it's going to be a big part of our future. The Sports Center with George Grand. He'll have the latest on what's happening all around. George?
Thanks, Lee, and welcome everyone to the ESPN Sports Center. From this very desk, in the coming weeks and months, we'll be filling you in on the pulse of sporting activity, not only around the country, but around the world as well. If it takes an interview, we'll do it. If it takes play-by-play, we'll do it. If it takes commentary, we'll do that too.
Bob Lee, the early days of CNN, they called it the Chicken Noodle Network because it just looked so kind of slapdash and thrown together. What do you remember about the early days of ESPN?
Well, yeah, if you could find the tape machine to play those old formats and play it back, it would look like Flintstones television. But at the time, it was cutting edge. And I think, Joshua, what really sustained this is that we were making it up as we went along. There were no rules. We had to go on the air. The contracts were signed. And, George Grand, who remains a dear friend, and Lee Leonard, who just passed away in the last year, were the first voices and faces. And they threw a bunch of kids out there. I was 24 when I got hired. And so was Chris Berman. And Tom Meese was just a few years older. And we all joined in that first month. And we had three shows to do every day, and we had the airtime to fill, and we had to do it. And the instructions that we had from our initial president, Chet Simmons, who was there at the creation along with Bill Rasmussen, the founder of the network, Chet said, talk to sports fans the way you want to be talked to yourself. And, here's the guy who came in as the president of NBC Sports and came over to ESPN telling me, and I'm 24 and I'm just hired. I was available to relocate and I was ready to work for their money and turning us loose. And it was very invigorating.
Remind us what sports television was like when ESPN signed on. There was a little bit of innovation going on. I mean, Monday Night Football went on the air in 1970. So Rune Arledge was starting to kind of shake up the way we looked at sports. But ESPN really was kind of a format buster, right?
Well, sports television, Joshua, existed, and if some of your viewers aren't old enough to remember back to the 60s and the 70s, there were three broadcast networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, and they broadcast sports for maybe a 2 to 3 hour window on Saturdays and Sundays, and that was it. That was it. And of course, your local television sports show would have 3 or 4 minutes of sports. And through the 60s and 70s, and Warner Wolf pioneering the use of highlights. Let's go to the videotape. But it was segregated basically for sports events and sports news into the weekend. And here we were coming on 24/7 with events and SportsCenter numerous times a day with scores and highlights. It was something. I remember the reaction to it. People couldn't believe what they were seeing. We would get the clips in from around the country and the reaction to people, what they were saying in our mail, and it was as if we had reinvented fire.
Eric Deggins, one of our listeners, called in to share her memory of the first time she heard that a 24-hour sports network would be coming to cable. Here's what Teresa left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Teresa, and I'm from Old Greenwich, Connecticut. And I just wanted to say I've been watching SportsCenter and listening to it on my app when I'm walking. And just absolutely love it. Watch College Game Day every week. I can't wait to see how my Florida Gators are doing. And also, I just wanted to say, I will never forget when I was about 15 years old, and it was the first time a cable man ever came to our house. And he told us that there was going to be a channel dedicated to nothing but sports. And I still remember it. Like, we lost our minds. We were so excited about it. I can still remember that to this day. I can't believe it's been 40 years.
Teresa, thanks very much for sharing your story with us. And Eric, I wonder if you would just kind of add on to what Teresa was saying, not only because it changed the way we watch sports, but it kind of changed the business of sports as well.
Well, ESPN changed so much. I mean, ESPN, the way ESPN grew, it grew as the cable industry grew. I mean, it's hard for people to imagine now, but, you know, CNN didn't exist. MTV didn't exist. I mean, the ESPN debuted, and I think the first broadcast had like 30,000 viewers, tons of technical problems. I'm sure Bob recalls this. But there was this idea that television could provide something that a focused audience wanted. You know, before then, television was a broadcast medium. You put on stuff to reach the widest array of people possible. ESPN was the first big effort to come along to say, you know what, we're going to offer something that we know only a portion of the audience is going to be interested in, but they're really going to be interested in it. And we're going to super serve them. We're going to give them everything they could possibly want in this area and make a business out of that. And as they figured out how to make a business out of that, cable television figured out how to make a business out of that. And ultimately, we got this media universe now where it's all about what the audience wants. ESPN came along at a time when it was not that at all.
Bob, when you retired from ESPN after hosting your show Outside the Lines, SportsCenter anchor Scott Van Pelt, who anchors one of the late night editions of SportsCenter, had a farewell tribute, and he talked about one of the many big sports stories that you worked on. Here's part of that tribute.
In early June of 2016, Muhammad Ali passed away at the age of 74. The news didn't come as a shock. We knew it was coming, we just weren't certain when. We'd been preparing to leave for the night when the news was confirmed. The greatest was gone. It was almost 12:30 a.m. That's when we all turned back around and went on the air. Our show began, then continued without commercial interruption until 4:14 a.m. I was in here with Jeremy Schapp. John Anderson was in the studio as well. At 1:30 in the morning, Bob Lee arrived and took a seat at the desk. There's a lot I'll remember about that night, a lot of pride to have been part of something we and only we are wired to do. Mostly, I'll remember looking up and seeing Bob Lee join the show. He and Jeremy were still going strong after 4 a.m. If you're going to go on the air and do almost 4 hours of unscripted television, you need a general. And we had ours.
That's SportsCenter anchor Scott Van Pelt and part of his farewell tribute to Bob Lee. Bob, I wonder what it was like for you, particularly in the network's evolution as it became clear that ESPN was not just going to be a sports channel, but also a news organization, too.
Well, that was very important. I mean, we had the scores and highlights, but there are a number of inflection points, Joshua, along the way. I think back to the hiring of John A. Walsh, an incredibly agile mind in working in collaboration with Steve Anderson in beginning in the mid to late 1980s, bringing some form and substance to SportsCenter. I think of the watershed year of 1989, when we had a leadership position on the Pete Rose gambling story, and it's 30 years now, it's hard to remember that how that had galvanized the country for a full summer, and we were out in front on that, breaking story after story and being really on the cutting edge of it. And then just several weeks after Rose was suspended, and then Commissioner Bart Giamatti passed away suddenly, being at the earthquake, at the World Series, I should say, where the earthquake occurred, in ESPN, we were the first on the air with news from the San Francisco Bay Area national television of what happened then. And you look back at a confluence of events such as that, and seriously, we had placed a flag in the sand of journalism. And we had done that before. Then in the next year, 1990, Outside the Lines debuted as an episodic show, and eventually would become a daily or nightly show.
Right, right.
But it was always very important for us to do more than just the scores and the highlights, and I think we expanded that over the subsequent decades.
Well, certainly highlights are one of the things that people know ESPN and SportsCenter for. We will add a current SportsCenter anchor to the conversation as we continue with ESPN veteran Bob Lee and NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you, and you are getting not just the highlights, but the full play-by-play with 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from CarMax. For more than 25 years, CarMax has made it easy to sell your car. They provide free appraisals and offers on the spot. CarMax will buy your car even if you don't buy theirs. In fact, CarMax has bought more than 8 million vehicles. To learn more and schedule your free appraisal, visit CarMax.com.
Starting college can be overwhelming.
Everyone from almost every background has that fear that they got in here by accident. That's scary.
NPR's Life Kit is here to help make your freshman year a little easier. Listen to NPR Life Kit's new guide on college, or subscribe to Life Kit All Guides for all the episodes all in one place.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're reflecting on 40 years of ESPN. Eric Deggans, let me come to you for a second. Before we dig in too much deeper, can you just contextualize for us a little bit more about ESPN in the larger scheme of television? I think it would be easy to hear this conversation and think, oh, you're just geeking out over something that's just for those sports fans. Why do I care? How big is ESPN, really?
Oh, ESPN is huge. And It embodies a lot of different contrasting elements as well. So as ESPN grew, it became the fulcrum that sort of grew the cable TV industry. But it also commanded a greater share of the revenue that comes from that industry, which helped push up everyone's cable bills and also sort of created this backlash. It became this huge programmer, but there was always this culture inside the company of trying to make it more about the product and less about the personalities. So you had great people like Chris Berman and Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick, who were doing this very individualized, wonderful work, but also had this sense that the company was always trying to keep them in check. You had a company that was doing great journalism, as Bob pointed out, and doing a great journalistic service, but also constricted by some of the contracts that it had with the sports teams that it was presenting. And in fact, you know, one reason why ESPN survived was because it began televising NFL football games. And now that's a blueprint for every sports network that's out there to try and get a piece of the NFL and also have these very lucrative contracts with these sports teams and sports leagues, but then it makes it tough to cover them journalistically. And then finally, I'll just say SportsCenter has had such an incredible impact on the TV industry because it started out with Chris Berman being sort of the ultimate fan. And then when you had Olbermann and Dan Patrick on what they called the Big Show, sort of satirizing sports television while they were also moving it forward, it created sort of a template that we see in places like The Daily Show and non-sports programming to sort of celebrate TV but also satirize it. So it was interesting to see ESPN change as people who grew up with television and respected some of its institutions but wanted to subvert other ones began to run the channel.
Would you just clarify?
It's been very interesting.
Would you just clarify, Eric, one piece of what you said in terms of ESPN and the impact on cable bills? How does that work? Why is it that ESPN's success affects what we pay for cable? Would you just explain that?
Sure. So ESPN will charge cable systems to have the channel. And because ESPN has been so popular for so long, they grew to charge larger and larger amounts to cable systems like Comcast and Spectrum to carry the channel. And you know, some economic analyses were coming out, you know, a few years ago to show that they were taking up something like $5 or $6 of every subscriber's cable bill was going to pay for ESPN and its suite of channels. And, you know, I'm sure the executives of ESPN would say, you know, well, people love us and they watch our channels. And so we should be, you know, we should be compensated for that, which makes sense. But it also helped drive up cable bills in the aggregate. And it made people question how much they were spending on cable. And then we started to see this cord cutting, which has impacted ESPN and has impacted the cable business as a whole.
Yeah, kind of began to substantiate like which channels are essential for cable owners, and then also allowed services like ESPN to also offer a service for cord cutters. You mentioned Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann. And Bob, I'd like to get your sense on the style of ESPN before we add one more voice to the conversation. Here's a quick clip from April of 1985, where Keith Olbermann is doing some NBA play-by-play.
Does a little ironing. Strickland again. Perhaps this is what the fight was about. It does not fall. Indiana, meantime, got red hot. Reggie Miller from way downtown. Bang. And then Mark Jackson's turn, also from three-point land. Jackson again. Circus move. Pacers on a 9-0 run. Just walk away, PJ. The Blazers have lost 6 of 7. This one came after a team meeting to discuss Friday's Carlissimo Strickland to-do. Strickland ended with 20 points, 11 assists, 19 points, 10 boards for Miller. So Charlotte took the court 3 behind the Pacers. Del Curry and Michael Adams just watching, injured. Hornets worked the pick and roll. Larry Johnson did it so well. A halo appeared around him.
That's part of Keith Olbermann doing play-by-play back in April of 1995. Bob Lee, what was behind that kind of playful, kitschy energy? Was that the spirit of the company then? Was it just marketing? Was it just Dan and Keith? Where'd that come from?
It was organic, Joshua. It was Keith's creativity, his partnership with Dan, in the micro of those two guys on the big show. But it was always the spirit of the company and I mentioned at the beginning we were making it up as we went along. There was more form and substance in management and oversight, certainly by the mid-90s, but have fun for crying out loud. Plus, I'll tell you, having done decades of SportsCenter, we have this little phrase that was originated by, I think it was Doug Myers, an original PA years ago, Cavs, Mavs, Jazz. Like they're all playing each other in one game, and the shot sheet and the highlight never ends. The point being, you'll do so many highlights in the course of an NBA season, your brain will go numb. So you have to make it fun. You have to make it fun for the viewers. If you're going to sit, if you're going to strap it in, sit down, open a beer, and watch a full hour SportsCenter in the middle of the winter, you're going to see so many damn highlights. You've got to do something to distinguish them and have fun with it. And you know the amazing thing about Keith. There are many amazing things about Keith, who's a good buddy. He would type those out verbatim. Now, we all didn't do that. He would sit down and type that out, and he would type it out early in the evening. I mean, that's just a remarkable eye into his creativity. But everybody did it differently. You have to be yourself. You're on television so much, you can't fool people. You know, if it's an act, truly an act, you'll be found out. Have fun. That's the key.
Well, let's hear from somebody who's having fun in this particular sandbox these days. Joining us now from ESPN Radio in Bristol, Connecticut, is Zubin Mehenti. He joined the team in 2011 as an anchor. He currently hosts SportsCenter on weeknights and weekends. Zubin, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Zubin, explain how you do highlights. You know, Bob said that Keith Olbermann used to write them out verbatim. Are you working from a verbatim script? Do you have bullet points? How do you know what plays to highlight? How do you keep the details straight? Walk us through that process.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is highlights are our bread and butter, so there's nothing more important than doing that right. And I think if you were to ask Scott Van Pelt, who comes on at midnight, or our crew that comes on before, everybody's got a different style of doing them. I don't think it's as rote as saying being a White House correspondent, right? Where you want to just be square-jawed as a man or a woman, stand there, deliver the facts, and end it and throw it back to New York. I think in sports, it's a lot different. I'll give you a couple examples. And this is why highlights are the bread and butter of what we do. if you've ever seen somebody watch like a rom-com or a movie, I know they only make superhero movies now, but if you think back to like a rom-com and those things got greenlit, you'd sit there and somebody would laugh at the same joke seven times. Or if you've seen Hamilton on Broadway, let's say you've seen it like five or six times, and you go back the sixth time and you're like, I didn't realize the nuance of that quote the first five times. Mm-hmm. That's the way highlights are. If Klay Thompson hits 14 three-pointers in an NBA game, which actually happened last season, people are going to want to watch that ad nauseum. Now, the 12-year-old might be watching because he loves Klay Thompson's kicks, his sneakers, right? Other people might be watching because they think you're watching one of the greatest shooters that's ever picked up a basketball. And I know Bob worked for a former vice president here that I worked for as well. And he said in sort of a grandiose way, a little facetious way, he said, the minute somebody starts doing highlights better than ESPN is when ESPN is quote unquote out of business. Now, of course he was joking, but what he said was, and what he meant was, ESPN's sweet spot on SportsCenter is highlights. So we have to be leading the way. It's a point of pride when you watch another network like Fox or CBS, and let's say you're targeting a 15 or 20 year old person that doesn't know who Boomer Esiason is,
right,
or they don't know who Chris Collinsworth is. You'll see a little box pop up on the screen and it'll say Chris Collinsworth, Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver, 1980 to whatever. And that's something that was popularized by ESPN. And it's a point of pride when you watch all of our other competing networks and you see some of the things, the tools, the applications, the graphics that we're using that are everywhere. And it's not just ESPN. I was telling somebody the story this morning. Steve Levy is going to be calling our Monday night football game, a dream assignment for him on Monday between the Broncos and the Raiders. He took his 9-year-old daughter to a game a few years ago, and she said to him, Dad, where's the yellow line? You know, so it's one of those things where you think about it and you say, all right, yeah, actually, that's, you know, that's just on television. It's actually not painted on.
You mean the yellow line, the kind of augmented reality line that shows you where the first down is, where they would have to get to get a first down.
Correct. And so I think those evolutions, many of those have been started by ESPN. You know, Fox in 94 was the first to put the score on the screen. Can you imagine, to all three of you, can you imagine watching a television event right now where you don't know the score, where you don't know if it's 30-15 in a tennis match for one game, or Brooks Koepka is 9 under par? Can you imagine watching a sporting event today without that information?
Well, and one of the other innovations, and I do want to get to some more questions from our listeners, but one of the other innovations is just some of those catchphrases. We heard Keith Olbermann do some of them. Another one of the luminaries of ESPN, who we really can't do this conversation without at least calling out, was Stuart Scott. He began at ESPN in 1993 and kind of pushed the sound of the network further into new territory, especially with his play-by-play.
Call Konerko butter, because he is on a roll.
And yo, let me tell you, his wasn't the only one tonight. SportsCenter starts time right about now.
Third inning, Derek Jeter in first. And booyah! You know this kid is as cool as the other side of the pillow. Three-run shot to left.
Some of the legendary play-by-play from the late Stuart Scott. Probably one of the reasons that Tom was a fan. Tom emailed, I had to use my imagination when I started listening to the University of Kentucky in the 40s. SportsCenter brought games and stories to life for me. Thank you, SportsCenter, for all you've done for sports fans everywhere. I want to talk more about the evolution of ESPN when we continue. Luis emailed, I was born in 83, and since then I was never into sports, but I've always been a geek, so video games have been my thing. I was very happy and proud to learn ESPN began showing video games as esports. I never would have thought that would happen if you told me when I was a kid, because video games had bad stigma back then and wasn't as mainstream as it is now. We'll discuss the evolution of sports television when we continue with anchor Zubin Mehenti, veteran anchor Bob Lee, and NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. We'll also hear from an ESPN correspondent who is covering the beginning of the NFL regular season right now, and we'll get to more of your questions and comments too. Stay close.
The queen in control. I hear still calling me butter because I'm on a roll.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating. That helps other people find the show. And don't forget, you can catch the news roundup at the end of every week.
What do all of these people have in common? Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and Bernie Sanders.
They're all running for president.
And they've all sat down with us on the NPR Politics podcast.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
We are going out on the trail with as many of the Democratic presidential candidates as we can and are bringing you in-depth interviews with them.
Come along by subscribing to the NPR Politics podcast.
Back now to our conversation with Eric Deggans, Bob Lee, and Zubin Mehenti. Before we get back to them and to some of your comments, let's speak to someone who is actually on the job right now, not in ESPN studios, but on the sidelines at Soldier Field in Chicago. Joining us now on the line is Michelle Steele. She's covering the beginning of the NFL regular season. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Joshua.
You're from Chicago, as I understand it. You started at ESPN late in 2011 in Boston and then moved back to your hometown at 2016. Give us a sense of what it was like working for ESPN in such a very heavily sports-devoted town like Chicago.
Chicago, and I would include Boston in that. You know, I started with ESPN being studio-based. I was more on the digital side where they were expanding so much of what we were doing on mobile as well as web when there was an opening. There was an opening in the Boston Bureau, and Chicago and Boston might be two of the biggest sports towns that I've ever been in, and I went for it. You know, I auditioned for the job. I showed my reporting chops. Them knowing that I had reported before I came to ESPN was really important. And like so many things in journalism, timing is 80% of everything. And when I had gone to Boston, and this was still in sort of the audition stage, I'd gone to Boston to cover an NFL player that the police were surveying at the time. And his name was Aaron Hernandez. And they assigned me to sort of watch his house and see what was happening and keep tabs on what the Patriots organization was doing. And that story became the most significant one, perhaps, that I've covered thus far in my career at ESPN. I followed it all the way until his conviction in New England for first-degree murder. And that was the first story I did. I'm glad I had my reporting chops, and it just showed me how important journalism is and was to ESPN.
In addition to that, you've also been on the investigative beat at ESPN. Is that right?
Yeah, I've done pieces for Outside the Lines. It's sort of the journalistic standard bearer at ESPN.
Talk about that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but Michelle, I'm curious in knowing, kind of back to the question we asked earlier, in terms of being part of a network that is both a programmer and a news organization that covers the sports that it programs, how do you manage that balance?
Yeah, the way I look at it is like a newspaper or a radio station that may be business partners with the teams that it covers, but there's always going to be that wall, that editorial wall between the reporters and the analysts and the anchors who are in the trenches, so to speak, and the people who are on the business side and the advertising side. You know, when I was at Bloomberg News, which is where I sort of cut my journalistic chops before ESPN, I would watch SportsCenter and think to myself, this is a company that is number one in the business, the 800-pound gorilla, so to speak, of sports programming and sports journalism, and they're still pushing the envelope. I never got the sense that they were letting up because of the position that they were in the market. On the contrary, they sort of leveraged that position to be able to push harder, cover the news as it should be covered, and not shortchange viewers.
Yeah, I know there are plenty of people who have complained over the years at various times, we just want to watch the game. Stop making it about politics and culture and all these other things. Just give me the highlights. Let me enjoy the sports. It's nice that there's all this visibility for various people. That's cool. But I just want to watch the game. Michael emailed, do you think ESPN's seemingly greater willingness to discuss politics and its link to sports help or hurt its popularity? Before I let you go, Michelle, how do you strike that balance between just talking about the game and what the game might mean in a larger sense?
Yeah, you know, I've been covering the NFL for ESPN since 2013, some of the most eventful years for this league, and certainly that includes when Colin Kaepernick started kneeling. I'm not someone who believes that we covered it in a way that maybe over-amplified the message of politics or polarization. We were covering it in a way that players spoke to us about, or that coaches spoke to us about. Or in my case, I was at the Cowboys-Cardinals game where Jerry Jones took a knee and talked to him before the anthem and talked to him after the game about why that was significant. I think that if your job is to cover sports and do it in a cerebral way and do it in a way that that players are experiencing it, you know, you need to talk about everything that they're experiencing this game. And that's one of the ways that they are experiencing it. I hate to overuse that word experience, but that's what we're trying to do. Bring the honest experience of playing a game, of being a professional athlete, to viewers and to readers. And if you don't talk about what they're experiencing on the field, then you are not telling the full story.
That's ESPN's Michelle Steele joining us from Soldier Field in Chicago. Michelle, thanks for talking to us.
You bet.
Zubin Mehenti, I know our time is tight, but it's interesting how sports is often kind of a lens for the way we view the world. It's one of those things that people have always or often said is just our escape from the rest of the world. But whether it's Jackie Robinson joining the majors, or the Black Power Fist at the 1968 Olympics, or the terrorist attack at the 1972 Olympics, or 9/11 and the way that sports responded to it, it's kind of inextricable. How do you just manage that as someone who's doing highlights when you know that sooner or later, real life is going to creep in?
I think you just accept it and take it for what it is. I mean, I think sports has always been a forerunner when it comes to these issues, and I think this is something that sports has gotten the short shrift on. You mentioned Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in 1947. I mean, that was way ahead of what this country was doing if you consider what was happening in the 1960s in the South. So sports ahead there. You go into any locker room, you go into an NFL locker room, you got 53 guys with 53 stories and 53 backgrounds, and they're all there working together. They've all took different paths to get there. Part of what they did to get there has fueled their ability to move on and be better at what they do. So I think a lot of it is just simply accepting the fact that it is real life. When I worked in local sports, they used to call the sports department the toy department, because that's how they looked at us vis-a-vis news and weather. But sports is a serious, serious business, both financially and socially. And I think in many, many ways, you mentioned the Mexico City Olympics, you mentioned Jackie Robinson, in many, many ways, countless ways, historians like Bob and others can tell you that sports has been ahead of society in a lot of ways and a lot of the issues we're dealing with today.
Bob, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but you have the most experience at ESPN, so I figured I'd put it to you. Craig asked a question that I would have asked also. Craig emailed, "I always wondered about ESPN broadcasting the Scripps National Spelling Bee. How did that come about?"
I don't know how it came about. I mean, yeah, is it an athletic event? It certainly works your brain.
The way those kids sweat, it might as well be.
Exactly. Is it something to be celebrated? Absolutely. I mean, what's the subtext of so much? We talk about the social impact of sports, and we talk about, you know, amateurism in college athletics, and is education even a factor in the lives of many college athletes who simply go for a scholarship for a chance to play the pros, blah, 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 and all of the values and the hypocrisies that may be in play. And here is the purest example of education, of young kids applying themselves. I don't know who to thank for it, but it's become a signature event for us. I think it's tremendous.
One last thing, Bob, before we have to wrap up. I know that you are just beginning your retirement after 40 years at ESPN. Where would you like to see the business of sports television go from here, whether at ESPN or elsewhere, before we go?
Well, it's changing. As we've mentioned in this hour, the platforms are changing. I'd like to see it embrace what are many changes that are approaching in this country. I think new platforms will emerge. But I tell you, at the end of the day, and it's been proven time and time again over the past 40 years, whenever these questions have been on the table, the one sure thing is the winner is the viewer, because the American capitalist system figures it out through competition and innovation and technology. And you know, you might pay a little bit more than you want to at the beginning, but costs will come down. You're going to be the winner at home, I promise you.
Bob Lee, a former host of ESPN's Outside the Lines and one of the original anchors of SportsCenter, one of the first employees of ESPN back in 1979. Bob, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Oh, it's been a joy to be here. Thank you.
Zubin Mehenti, one of the current anchors of SportsCenter. Zubin, thank you.
Appreciate it. I'm one of the biggest fans of Up First, so please pass that along.
Will do. And NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. Eric, would you pass that on to the team at Up First, please?
I will certainly happily do that.
Please do. Thank you, Eric. Today's conversation was produced by Stacia Brown and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You can learn more about them and the rest of the team online at the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.